Welcome to Not Another Runner Podcast, a running and health related podcast created by a run of the mill, yes, pun intended, everyday runner. Join me for all things running, health and well-being related, for the highs and lows of life, training and chasing goals. This podcast is designed to keep you motivated and enthusiastic on your journey to health and happiness. Every time I run, I discover something new about me and about life, be it a reason why I run or a discovery of myself. I genuinely find gratitude through running. I am able to stay healthy and fit through the execution of my passion, but furthermore, I am able to achieve peace, presence, growth, and discovery. And I love to hear all your stories on how running has changed your lives and what it's brought to you. I want to connect like-minded people through the power of podcast. Hello and welcome back, a massive welcome back to Not Another Runner Podcast and to part two of series three. Now, since the last episode was published, and as many of you will have seen online already via socials, Not Another Runner Podcast was awarded the Bronze Award in the Running Awards 2020's Best Vlog, Pod and Microblog category. Guys, I honestly could not believe it when I saw it. I had to rewind the clip back because I thought I'd imagined it. I thought I'd misheard. I had to rewind it back and just double check. Was that actually Not Another Runner Podcast image? Was it the podcast? Was it? Yeah, just genuinely, I could not believe it. So I just want to firstly say the biggest thank you from the bottom of my heart to all of you for your forever support, your continued sharing of the podcast and recommending it to other runners and friends, and for checking in with me continuously and with others within the community. I just can't thank you all enough. So yeah, a massive thank you for all your support and for your votes. I just hope to continue to deliver something that you guys will all enjoy. So that's as much as I'm going to say about that, but I just yeah, thank you so much. Could not believe it. Yeah, thank you. On that note, if ever there is a guest that you want to hear, as I said, I want to bring something to you all that you all enjoy, please do drop me a message, whether that's on Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, commenting, I think, on the new website that's gone live now. Do let me know, because I always want to be able to deliver something that you're going to enjoy. So hearing from you guys and who you want to hear about really does help. As you are aware, the podcast did take a small break. I took a mindful break away from the extra activities that I do. I was still working full-time during that period, so the intention was to take time away from recording and scheduling the podcast, and the additional admin that comes along with it. As you can imagine, the admin that comes with creating the podcast, scheduling, liaising with guests, putting it out online, marketing it, etc., takes quite a lot of time. And that is all time on top of the already full-time job that I do have, which is essentially Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, sat behind a desk continuously for 8 hours a day. And sadly, the more time I spend sat behind a computer, laptop, handset, mouse, technology, my phone, equals the more stress that I'm placing on the pre-existing injury. So I am trying my best to balance this as best as I can. It's quite difficult. And that's where the break was needed. And do you know what? It was amazing. It was, as much as I was working still, Christmas was lovely because I could really switch off and just enjoy my time of a little bit slower time, basically, with friends, family. Not literally, but even virtually, I felt like I was able to check in with them more regularly and felt less stress and pressure. Obviously felt the ability to spend more time with the family I was able to during the lockdown in Wales Christmas, but I was more present, and that is just what it should be about over Christmas. January was also a great relaxing month. I took 4 weeks away from everything social media. That was a blessing in disguise. I didn't know I needed it, but I did, and can't recommend it enough for if and when you do feel like you need a bit of a digital detox. But back now to deliver the second part of the series three, and I have some great guests lined up for you. I am so, so excited to share the next few episodes with you. I know I say that about every episode, but I am genuinely so excited to share the next few episodes with you. I hope you are keeping well and you're managing to find the little things to be grateful for today and this week. And if you are, let me know what those things are. Mine this week has to be the ability to exercise with others. I've been loving the walks with friends and family, as it's been such a tonic for me to be able to exercise with others, have that precious time, and also having a bit of a routine and schedule to my week. So I'm able to agree a time and a day with another person and then be held accountable and meet that person and just share that time of exercise together. It's been great. So yeah, let me know if there are things that you have been grateful for. I'd love to hear from you. And before I introduce today's guest, if you are listening today, please do take a screenshot and share online with me on socials, either via Facebook, Instagram, and let's encourage others to get up and get going. So on to the show, and to hear from the incredibly brave and fearless Charlotte Clark and her epic challenge that she has set herself this year. Hello and welcome to Not Another Run Up podcast. Today's guest is Charlotte Clark, a qualified level 3 personal trainer, an ex-professional dancer and an ultra runner, who is a perfect fit for the Not Another Run Up podcast, as her aim is much like this podcast, to encourage others to get active no matter what obstacles they have had to overcome. This aim mirrors that of the NAR podcast and its get up and get going despite level of ability. So I'm really, really excited to chat today with Charlotte. And what inspires me about Charlotte is how, despite going through two heart operations and the recovery this obviously entailed, this has not stopped her from getting up and getting going to reaching her goals and inspiring others in the process. Charlotte ran a solo virtual 50 kilometre in September 2020, her very first ultra, and then went on to run another, I think it's three, in January 2021, and has a huge goal for this year. She's an absolutely resilient and determined individual who is quite clearly a force to be reckoned with in the best sense of the phrase. Charlotte Clark, how are you doing, Charlotte?
Hi, Natalie. I'm good, thank you. Good to be here.
Really, really excited to chat with you today. As soon as we got this booked, I was like, yes, I've got so many questions to ask, as the intro will clearly speak for itself. I don't even know where to start, but I will start by asking, you know, what was life like for you growing up, and were you always active?
It was a very active childhood. I grew up dancing. It was kind of the one constant thing that we had. My dad was in the RAF, and so we moved around a lot and didn't have a very sort of stable sort of upbringing. But I've danced since I was about, I don't know, 2-3 years old, and wherever we went, I danced, and I went on to get a degree in dancing. So I've always been super active and used to like go running with my dad, like along the canal or whatever. So yeah, always been doing something.
And then, you know, how long into that career was it that you discovered that there was a problem, should we say, with your heart and all of that?
Yeah. So, it didn't present itself, shall we say, till I was about 14. And I would be doing like crazy, like 10-hour show rehearsal days and madness. But all of a sudden, I remember the very first time kind of I noticed there was a problem with my heart. I was in a rehearsal for a show, and all of a sudden, my heart just started racing really just weirdly. I could just feel that it wasn't just, you know, when you're like really working hard and you've got a high heart rate, something wasn't quite right. And turns out it wasn't right. It was something that I'd been born with but didn't present itself till I was about 14. and my heart would palpitate. So it would go at about 180 beats per minute, even if I was sat still doing absolutely nothing, for up to sort of 3 hours at a time. And it wasn't just beating fast, it was beating hard. So you could see like a pendant bouncing off my chest, or if you were to hug me while it was happening, you'd kind of like move with my heart rate. And then when my heart rate would go back into its normal rhythm, that could then cause me to pass out. So that first happened when I was 14, and I was kind of dismissed from doctors, told I was just a teenager kind of making it up. I was like, don't really make these things up, you know, because unless it's palpitating, you can't track it without surgery. So by the time I'd made it into hospital and everything, my heart rate had gone back to normal, and kind of to look at through an ultrasound or any kind of scan, it just looked like a normal working heart. But then even with ECG scans, but when it's palpitating, that's when you catch it. So it took them 7 years to diagnose. So I got it diagnosed during my dance degree at university, and had my first operation in between my second and third year at university in that summer break. And then kind of 4 months into recovery, I was back at university, everything was fine. And they kind of say, if you make it past 3 months and you've not had any palpitations, you can pretty much celebrate you've got a perfect heart again. I made it to 4 months, and I was in a rehearsal again, and it started to palpitate, and I just kind of sunk to the floor and cried, because I knew that it meant that the first operation hadn't worked. And so then I went back on the waiting list, but just asked if I could wait until I'd finished my degree. So I don't know, almost a year later, to have the second operation. And it was just, I scar badly. I get keloid scars, and the scar tissue inside my heart had just kind of grown. And so the signal was back looping around itself again. But then I had the second operation in November 2013. And I can now declare I've got a normal working heart, and everything's fine. Everything is fine now, which is great.
Which is amazing, and you can see that you're doing well from what you've achieved in these last few months. But when you first felt those palpitations come back before that second op, it must have been, number one, frightening, frustrating, and just all of those emotions. How did you feel when that happened, especially as you were studying your degree with dance?
Yeah, I just, like I said, I sunk to the floor and just bawled my eyes out. We were in quite a small rehearsal. It was maybe me, one other dancer, and our tutor. And it was a weird, you know, they say things happen for a reason and everything. It was a weird coincidence, but my tutor, he had had open heart surgery as a child. So he got it. And I just bawled my eyes out on the floor, because I was like, oh, I kind of thought I'd be fine now. And at the point, because there was no real thing, like single thing that triggered it to happen ever, when it started palpitating again, I was like, I'm in my third year, I'm the dance captain of our company, like this is supposed to be like my time. And I didn't want to get to the point again where I sat out watching rehearsals instead of dancing when it started palpitating. And that's all I could think of was, this is supposed to be the best year of my degree, and I want to be a performer, my ongoing career, and now we're kind of back down to square one, and it just devastated me. But luckily, when the palpitations were coming back, they were kind of a bit more few and far between, because it wasn't like I was back at square one before the first operation. Like it had kind of done some of the work. But I just needed the second op, which was the same procedure, just again. But yeah, it was pretty devastating that it didn't work the first time.
And what was, after having that second op, what was life like for you at that time? How much time did you need for recovery? And what were you able, when was it that you were able to get back to your level of fitness?
It's a really weird procedure. So it's keyhole, and the go in through your leg, up to your heart. You're awake the whole time. They're kind of fiddling around with bits in there, can see an x-ray. Like, I'm wide awake and there's a live x-ray of my heart with wires in it, like crazy things. And the very first operation I had, it was just day surgery. I went in the morning, had the operation, I was out in the evening, which is just mad. Like, it's the thing beating, keeping me alive, and I'm just in and out in a day. But the second time, I was in overnight, and they'd actually had to... So what happens is, when they found the bit of dodgy tissue, I basically had some extra tissue in my heart, which made everything loop around. They find that bit of extra tissue and then burn it away. And the second operation, they had to stop kind of just before they kind of wanted to, because if they'd have carried on, they were getting too close to my natural pacemaker. So if they'd have carried on at sort of 21 years old, I'd have needed a pacemaker fitted. So they kind of just called it and just hoped for the best that that was it. And luckily it was. But then that time they'd gone in through both of my legs. And so by the time I got home, I was just shuffling around like a penguin. I couldn't walk properly. And that was the November. I probably wasn't kind of back up to full fitness, I don't know, until maybe the February, like a few months. Like, it wasn't crazy, but I was probably back in the gym properly by around the February.
And after that, was it a return to dance, or, you know, what was physical activity like for you at that point?
It was kind of like, so I'd moved after university. I was living in Reading, and sort of professional dance classes were in London. There wasn't really anything for adults of that level locally. So I'd occasionally take the train into London for a class, but general fitness wise, it was just kind of going on local small runs and, you know, going to the gym for a body pump class or something. But yeah, it was weird because I'd moved back after university. What I did to be, sorry, the activities I was doing to be active were then completely different, because I'd finished my degree. I just had to find something to keep me active again, because I'd been so used to just moving all the time.
What year was it you graduated?
2013.
2013. So since then, you picked up, you know, classes, body pump, a couple of local runs. I'm assuming that's when you got into like bodybuilding as well. Or was that before then?
No, that came later. So I had the operation done in 2013. 2014, in the autumn, I moved to London to, you know, pursue dancing. And I did bits of dancing, TV work, modelling, kind of that artsy stuff for a while. And then it wasn't until November 2015. I was filming an advert for Pure Gym. It was like their first TV advert, and it was like super exciting, you know. Mm-hmm. And I met a personal trainer there, and it turns out he was a personal trainer at my gym. And so then we got training together, and it always intrigued me about competing. I'd watched this documentary years and years ago when Jodie Marsh did it. And you saw kind of just how hard she had to train and what she was putting her body through. And I was like, wow, I wonder what that feels like. I'd love to know what that feels like. But never in a million years did I think that I would actually then put myself through it. But I was in a PT session with my PT, and he was like, have you ever thought of competing? And I was like, oh no. That little seed that I already had planted from watching that TV show, he'd then said that, and I was like, oh no, it's going to happen, isn't it? And so then it wasn't until November 15 that I decided I would then get into sort of bikini competing. And yeah, he prepped me, and I did my first competition in April 16. So I didn't get into that until sort of a few years after the surgery, and I'd kind of like taken a sidestep from the dancing and then into bikini competitions.
Mm. And did you enjoy it? How long did you do it for?
So I did three competitions in total, but over the space of a few years. So I started my first ever prep November 2015. And then I did my last show end of 2017, you know, bow out with a win. So I won my last show. And but I knew, because I wanted to be natural, I was never going to take any, you know, steroids or anything. And unfortunately, it is unregulated. And I knew in order to do well at the next level in the pro sort of categories, I was going to be up against girls far bigger than me. And I was just going to look like I'd never lifted anything in my life if I didn't take time out to actually put the work in to grow enough muscle tissue. And I just started, you know, eating without Tupperware and too much kind of restriction. And I was like, do you know what? I've done this for a few years. This is great. I've had the best time doing it because I was working in fitness as well. So I was able to make my whole life this thing. So it wasn't like I was changing my life to do it or having to fit it around my life. I lived and breathed it for sort of 3 years because I was personal training too. And then it got to a point and I was like, I've done that. I'd quite like to just enjoy life without any restrictions and find a way of challenging myself and any kind of judgment being based on my performance rather than what I look like. Because I'd grown up dancing, I'd then gone into modeling, TV work, and then I went into bikini competitions. And so everything from sort of the age of, well, 2 up until 26, I want to say, had been based on what I looked like. And that's challenging.
I was going to say that has got to be so challenging. I can't imagine. I definitely wouldn't do well in an environment like that. I'd find it very difficult. Did it have a negative impact on you and like your mentality towards food and aesthetics and how you looked?
Yeah, so I'd grown up having problems with food, and you know, it'd been to the doctors, diagnosed with eating disorders, been to therapy. And it's not until I'm in a great place with food now, like it doesn't control me at all now. But it's not until I stepped out of the sport of competing that I realized that I think I'd entered the sport for the wrong reasons. So I know there's a lot of slack, like bodybuilding gets a lot of slack for creating problems, but honestly speaking, I think I entered the sport for the wrong reasons as just another means to restrict, to you're basically telling everyone I'm losing weight for a reason and you're going to be okay with it because it's bodybuilding, you know? And so, yeah, I did have problems because you prep and you are cutting for so long, you get down to such a small body fat percentage, and then you do your show and then it's like, oh, post-show treats, so you just go a bit wild afterwards because you've been on crazy low calories in the lead up to it. And then you're like, okay, so I finished my show now, I'm gonna smash a pizza, I'm gonna go out and eat all of my favorite places. I'd got a stash of food that I'd been sort of collecting while I was prepping, going, yeah, I'm going to have that after, I'm going to have that after. Next thing you know, I've got this huge like bag for life full of all of my favourite things that you think, you know, that it's fine. I'll just like space it out and I'll make it last forever. I'll just enjoy it. I just know I've got it there for after. But it doesn't last long. You just plough through it. And then all of a sudden you've got all this water retention. You feel horrendous about yourself. And, oh, it was just horrendous.
Yeah,
and I just knew I didn't want to do that again, so I've since managed to get myself into a fantastic place to be in mentally. But and like I said, I know it gets a lot of slack, but it didn't create those problems for me. I entered into it with the problems and for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And that's where sometimes it can be very, very dangerous. If those tendencies are already there or that there is work to be done, you know, going into that environment then can just be all you know, very, very debilitating and just exacerbate the issues that are already there, so to speak.
Yeah, 100%.
I found myself, having gone through issues myself with food, body dysmorphia and eating disorders, that running was the one thing that really truly healed me, because I knew as soon as I started running and increasing that distance that my body needed the correct fuel, the correct amount of food, and that was both, you know, fueling accordingly, like enough, sufficiently, but also not fueling too much, because I'd struggled with binge eating disorder and once upon a time, you know, eating too few calories, and bulimia as well. I knew that I had to fuel myself accordingly to be able to run in an enjoyable way and also to progress. Did you feel when you discovered running again, and discovered it in a greater way, did you feel like that gave you some healing tools?
Oh, 100%. It's just really freeing, isn't it? And I don't know, I don't know how to describe it to people who don't run, but it just gives you this space to just free your mind. Your body just feels great for it. And at the point when I knew I wanted to take running seriously again at the start of last year, so like January 2020, I was like, if I want to be doing these things, I know I've got to treat my body right in order to do it. And so then, yeah, it became less about, I know running can be quite sort of an access sport for people who want to lose weight. And that's great if that's what people want to do. But it needed to be more than that for me. It needed to be, it kind of started off as just something for me to do with my dog together, because she has separation anxiety from quite a troubled first year of her life. And so it just started off as an activity we do together. And then I was like, you know what? After 10 years of not doing this, I actually really quite like it again. And then it became less just social and recreational and more, I'd really like to see what I can do. And given that everything I've put my body through, from those preps, from not eating enough growing up, from my heart operations, it was time to, something clicked last year where I was just like, I want to see what I'm truly capable of. I don't care, it's not about what I look like anymore. And however I look is a byproduct of how I'm training, but I'm not training to look a certain way. And in order for me to perform properly and be able to actually see what I am truly capable of, that includes looking after my body through the right nutrition as well. So it came, it was just a switch, and it was like, I need to be sensible about this if I want to be serious in what I'm doing.
And before you know, you seriously took up running, you know, had you done much of it? Had you had much of a history with running throughout school and afterwards and during university?
So, yeah, so I'd run at school. I was probably one of the only girls at my school that was really happy when cross-country season came about. there was, like, me and one other girl, and we'd just go out and smash it. And I don't remember a lot of my childhood from moving around so much, but I remember when it came to cross-country, you had to do like two laps of the field. And if you did that within a certain time, you got the opportunity to run around the local estate during your VE lesson. And I remember just being so psyched to get out there and do cross country. And then it came to sports day and I'd enter everything that I was physically able to do. So it'd be two running races. It'd be the relay. It'd be a jump as well. So I was sort of the 800 meters and 1500 meters, the longer of the track events. And yeah, so I'd do as much as I could at school, and then I'd run the local 10k races every year, but I'd collapse at the end every time. I've got a scar down my leg from running in grass spikes on sports day and passing out at the end, and one foot, you know, tore into the other calf. And yeah, so then St John's ambulance would always be waiting for me at the end of our local 10k. So I'd always do that. And then I got to university and I was dancing sort of like 10 hours a day, and nobody liked running And so I didn't have anyone to share that with. Mm. And I did a Race for Life, I think, in my first year, and came fourth out of like 4,000 people, which was incredible, crazy. But then didn't run again. That was, what, 2011? So, yeah, 2011? I think it was 2011. Yeah. So I took about 9 years off running. So that was 2011. I just didn't really run after that. Nobody liked it. And then when I got into like the bodybuilding and everything after, I was like, cardio, oh no. Like, just give me a squat bar. Like, absolutely not. And now I find that so hilarious that I'll go out and run for 6 hours for fun now. But during that time, I was like, you will never catch me running ever again. And so I had grown up running and then just fell out of love completely for it for about 9 years.
It's mad, isn't it, that it was that long, and then last year, 2020, you start running again. and you know, I remember we were chatting earlier and you were saying how you were so proud that you'd done a 10 kilometer for your birthday last year. So, you know, we're talking Feb last year, building up to a 10 kilometer, and then looking at what you've achieved since. How on earth have you managed to do this and do it safely, build up? Like, what made you want to build up that distance so much to run your very first ultra marathon and then go on to do several January this year in such a short space of time? Like, how has that been?
So basically what happened was, after obviously heart operations, and a couple of years ago the British Heart Foundation shared my story on their blog, and they reached out to me last year and was like, let's do something together. It was going to be the London to Brighton bike ride. But after, I didn't own a bike, I didn't have anything, they weren't able to source a bike for me, and cycling isn't something that I go out and enjoy or anything. And when I got diagnosed before my operations, I was told I wasn't allowed to ride a bike on the road or anything in case I passed out. And so it just didn't really... It sounded like a great idea to begin with, and I was like, I just don't think I can do that. And then I was like, how about I do a running event for you? I enter one of the races that you sponsor, and I'll raise money that way. But I knew if I was going to do a running event, it had to, and raise money, it had to be something that looked like enough of a challenge for me in order to gain the traction for fundraising, if that makes sense. So because I'd grown up running, because I'd gone on and competed and stuff, I felt like if I just picked like a 10K or a half marathon or even a full marathon, I felt like it was that kind of time of year where everybody's going, I'm running the marathon. And so everybody's asking for money for a marathon. And I was like, I need to go big. And the furthest I've ever run at this point is 12K. I'm going to run 50. And I was just like, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to run an ultra marathon. If there's going to be one way to raise money, I'm going to run further than anybody ever perceived I'm ever going to be able to have run. So yeah, I picked a 50K, and ironically, conveniently, it was the Thames Path Challenge, and I was going to do half of the Thames Path Challenge, which starts in London, and the half I was doing ends in Surrey. And conveniently, the route was going to run straight past my flat in Surrey. So I was essentially running home from London. And so that's what I put out as my thing, going, I'm running home from London. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're crazy. Still at this point where I announced this, I think the furthest I'd run was 12K.
Did you realise the distance that it would be, like in miles? You know, when you said, oh, I'm going to do this, did you realise that length?
Yes, but it hadn't sunk in. So I knew very much that I was running 5 miles more than a standard marathon. But because I'd only ever run 12K, I couldn't quite comprehend how that would feel, what that would look like. I just knew that it was really far. And And it wasn't until I then got into training and someone I used to work with offered to coach me. So she helped me through all of that. But yeah, it just, I don't know how I would have done it without her. Like, she did a very like incremental training plan that like built me up for it. But at the time when I said yes to running it, the idea was I'm just going to finish it. It wasn't I'm going to run for a particular time. I'm not even planning on trying to run a great time. I just want to be able to run the whole thing and not walk it, essentially. And yeah, I just hadn't quite comprehended what it meant, even though I knew it was really far.
How did you find that training initially? Like, I remember building up to half marathon distance and then building up for a marathon. And, you know, when you reach those milestone, you know, miles then or a distances, like, it's a huge deal, but it's also a huge physical activity and feat to get there. So how was it building up the distance? Like, did you ever once regret the goal that you'd set, or did you struggle? How was it?
I mean, fortunately, when I started training for this, I only started training for it maybe a couple of weeks before we went into lockdown. So all of a sudden, I had lots of time to use to train because I couldn't go out and do anything else but run. So the amount of time I had to train was fantastic, but I got a small injury at the very, very beginning, just like a really tight TFL muscle just made my quads and my femurs feel like they were just going to combust right there and then. But then that sorts itself out pretty quickly. But I remember getting to my first half marathon. And what's great is when you're training for something like that for the first time, every long run is your longest run. You're like, wow, I've ran that far. This is fantastic. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, but next week I need to run further. Okay. And I remember going out and running my first half marathon and, you know, being so proud I was running my half marathon, and it was only a training run, but as if I was going out to run a half marathon for fun on a Sunday. And it was the first run where I guess I needed a bit more like intra fuel. And I just kind of had like maybe a gel and hadn't really thought too much about it. And I remember getting back and it was like right at the start of Zoom quizzes, you know, and we'd got one set up with family in the evening, and I felt so sick, so incredibly sick. I was sat on my bathroom floor going, what have I done? I've ran half a marathon. I'm now ready to throw up and I don't think anything's going to help me out of this. How am I going to run double this and then some? It was that run that I remember thinking, wow, I've taken on a lot here. And then I learned that full sugar Coke and Haribo were my best friend. And that was kind of my ritual after a long run then, was sipping on a full sugar Coke, which I would never normally drink. I've always grown up drinking diet soft drinks. But I'd pop to the petrol station after my run, grab myself a can of full sugar Coke. And that was kind of like the one thing that just stopped me feeling sick after these runs. And I'm glad I found that out pretty early on. But yeah, it was that first half marathon where I was like, what have I signed up for?
Oh, God. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? And especially when you're new to the distances. Like, I always remember having like anxiety of like, okay, am I fueling enough? Because I wouldn't weigh food. Like, I think for me, that was just not healthy for me and my head because of like how I used to be in the past. Mm-hmm. So like I'd always have that bit of anxiety like the night before, like, okay, have I fueled enough? Oh, I'll just have like just a little bit more of like just a little bit more oats or just a little bit more of this, because I'd be so scared of having that sick feeling, like that sick feeling that you can't return from. And it's funny, isn't it? Like you saying about the full sugar Coke. Again, all of these things that I used to deny myself for years and years, finally, I was like, well, I'm allowed it. It's okay because I'm exercising, I'm running, I'm allowed this fuel. So everything in moderation. Mm. It was just such a freeing time of being able to allow myself the food and, you know, items that I would never used to allow myself to have. Yeah, it was quite exciting.
Yeah, so, never in a million years would I have bought a full sugar Coke normally. Yeah. And now I'm like, I need that.
Yeah.
I need that after my run.
How did you find like continuing on then after that day where you did that half marathon and feeling so sick? Did you find yourself researching, or did you still kind of just see how you went and see how you were feeling?
I knew I never wanted to feel like that ever again. And so I think I put out an Instagram story and I was like, guys, this is how I felt after my run. This is not okay. Has anybody got any tips for what they've done when they felt like this before? And it was one of my friends that suggested the Coke, and that's why I tried the next time. And I was like, wow, this is magic. And then I got scared to try anything else in fear of it returning. So even still now, like a year, well, not quite a year later, but however many long runs since, it's still my go-to thing when I finished my run. But yeah, then after that, I just tried different things. I'm still not great at, you know, eating like a sandwich as I run. Some ultra runners like, oh yeah, like at this point into my run and eat a ham and cheese sandwich. I'm like, how do you chew that and run at the same time? I don't understand. And so I've not quite got my head around that. But I'll have like Cliff Blocks or something. I've got some of the Lucha Delichos. And so I'll snack little bits as I run and so I'm not always taking on gels, because sometimes that's just not okay. Mm-hmm. That's quite a lot of pressure to put your digestive system under to just have gels for like 5 hours. But yeah, I've tried different like food sources as I'm running. And luckily, like as long as I don't really take on caffeine as I'm going, I'm okay. I'll have a coffee before I run, but I'm not one. I won't have like a caffeinated gel or like the caffeinated Cliff Blocks or Tailwinds like Go, but I'll just eat bits of sweets, Cliff Blocks, those kinds of things as I'm going, and then have my Coke and like a chocolate milkshake after. But now that I found that all those things work for me, I get worried about mixing up and trying new things for the fear of that sick feeling coming back.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think once you find what works for you, you just keep hold of it and just don't change it, especially not on D-Day or race day.
No.
And for you, continuing with your training, you mentioned you had a very small injury very early on. And I'm thinking we were going into lockdown at that point. So were you able to access any support at the time? Because that was one huge thing last year was, you know, any athletes training, you know, the ability to see a physiotherapist in person or, you know, sports masseuse was very slim to be able to access that.
Yeah, I had a remote video session with a physio. So it was really weird because I lived in a flat at the time and we just didn't have a lot of like space for me to like lie on the floor with a camera set up. Like, not that those are the things you plan to have to need to have room for, but I ended up out in the corridor in the like flat building, not our own flat, just in the corridor with my phone, like, I don't know, balanced against my foam roller, rolling around on the floor to a physio. Can you see me? Is the camera okay? Is this okay? She's like, try this. And so I had, a virtual physio session, and then checked back in with her like a week later and we sorted it out. But it was all very surreal, wasn't it, last year at that point? Because it was the very start of things changing. So yeah, where you'd normally go and see a physio, I then ended up on FaceTime to one instead.
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it? I had one the other day. It's just not the same. And then like if their connection goes or yours is gone and they're trying to tell you something really important and then like they're going all muffly, it's like, ah, I can't, you know, and it just takes a lot of energy as well doing that on video.
Yeah.
But so how long did that injury hold you back for?
Luckily, only a couple of weeks. By the time I got some massaging into there, I was given like rehab exercises and everything, and then it was actually okay after that because I was sensible and listened to what she was saying and did it, and I was like, oh, that actually works. And so yeah, it only held me back for a couple of weeks, and then I was able to continue progressing into my training.
And how was it on the day that you took on that challenge? You know, who was there to support you? How did you get yourself through? Were you listening to anything to keep you going?
So I did it in September. So it was around the time when, you know, some restrictions had been lifted and you could have like small gatherings. And I was just running it around my local area, and like my mum and dad had come down and my auntie had come down. I had a couple of friends that were jumping into sections with me. And so my route was an out and back, which brought me to half marathon, and then three local loops. And so at the out of the out and back, like mum and dad were there and they'd made a flag and everything, and they were just like waving it in the park. So that was really sweet. That was like 11K in, and that kind of gave me the boost. And then I made my flat, like my checkpoint. So normally, obviously in an ultra, you'd have like aid stations and everything, but because this was just my own ultra, I made my flat sort of my aid station so that I could always come back to there, grab a drink if I needed it, pop to the loo if I needed it. And so then my boyfriend jumped in and he did 10K with me. And then I had a friend who did the last sort of 16K with me, and another friend that jumped in for the last six. And so it was kind of like one in, one out to join me for various bits of my run. And then when I finished, they'd all got like, they'd got like a ribbon for me to run through. They'd got a homemade cloth sign saying like Charlotte's Ultra Marathon, 50K. And God knows what all the neighbours thought was going on, because there was a lot of cheering going on outside. But yeah, it was so funny because I'd done because it was my first everything, my first marathon in the August. And it was the hottest day ever. And I got to sort of 38K maybe in the marathon, and I stopped and I bawled my eyes out. I called my boyfriend and I was like, I just don't know if I can do this. And he was out walking my dog and he was like, you can, like, it's just another 10K. Like, it's fine. Marathon. So it's what, 42K. So I probably got to like 30K rather, sorry. And I was like, I can't do this. And he was like, you can, it's fine. It's just 10K. That's all it is. It's fine. And luckily I'd put a face mask in my hydration pack, because I'd had to run into the co-op and take on extra water that I hadn't anticipated needing because of how hot it was. And I'd left the house at 7 a.m. to try and beat the heat, and there was just nothing beating it. And I remember that being the worst experience. And all I could think was, what if my 50s like that? Like, what am I going to do? Because it's an extra 8K on top of that. But it was like a completely different experience. On event day, something just happened. Like, I managed to do the whole 50K in under 5 hours, and everything felt fantastic. I was running faster than I thought I would. And obviously it was in adrenaline and people had come out to support me and everything, and it wasn't as hot. But yeah, the actual 50 was actually really nice. And felt like such kind of such a celebration of everything that I'd been working up to do. And it was really lovely.
Were there any really bad lows at all during that 50K?
So I didn't really have a time when I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this. I remember in my maybe last 10K, because I'd done it so that I'd done an out and back, and then I did a 10K loop, a 6K loop, and then the same 10K loop again. It was that second time I was doing the 10K loop, and I was like, why have I done a looped run? Like, I know exactly how I'm feeling running this because I've already done it once today, and I really don't want to be doing it this second time. And so I remember just feeling, I think it was a little bit of boredom, a little bit of frustration, because I was like, I've already done this, why am I doing it again? But when I'd planned it out and done it that way, in my head it was just sounded like a good idea, because I was like, I run that route all the time. I know how far I've got left to go, and it's only 10K. What's 10K? But at the time, I was just like, why have I done this? I hate myself for it. Like, this is horrendous. But not so much. It was never like the marathon where I honestly thought I couldn't complete it. It was just frustration at myself for like thinking, why did I think I'd want to do this for a second time when it was already hard?
What training for that first ever ultra marathon and everything that you achieved in my opinion as well, such a short space of time. Some people take, you know, that very same time to train up to a half or even a full. What do you think were the biggest takeaways from that experience?
Oh, I guess that's a big question. I guess for me it was that, you know, if you want to do something and you are sensible about it, you absolutely can do it. It sounds like, obviously goals are there to scare you. Like, it wouldn't be a goal if it was something you could achieve already. And for me, I knew it had to be so big that it scared me, but also so big that I knew I had to really train my butt off for it. And yeah, it was just that, you know, sometimes your body's going to hurt, but you've got to build that resilience. It's that mental resilience you need to build at the same time. And yeah, I guess it's that, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, you know. Like, my time goals, I didn't have any. Like, I just kept that kind of pressure off me. My goal was just to complete it. It didn't matter how long I needed to do it in. My goal was just to complete it. And although I trained for about 6 months for it, which in some aspects things like, wow, like 6 months for one event, that's huge. But equally it was 6 months from a 10K up to a 50, which is huge in a short space of time. But I know lockdown has really badly affected a lot of people, but when it came to running and my training, it gave me more time to be able to do it. So that made it more achievable because I could pretty much get out and run whenever I needed or wanted to. So I didn't have any, you know, like the commuting, the going to work, because we were all working from home. So everything was exactly where I was, so it just freed up so much extra time to be able to actually go and do my sessions.
Definitely, I can see that, and I can see that in other people's training as well. It's almost like, you know, not everyone, as some people are still having to go to work and perhaps their workload has increased because of the situation that we're in, but for a lot of people they've been given that gift of time. So many people have had, you know, commutes all their life, some of which are an hour each way, so that gift of time has been invaluable to so many people. So it is nice to see, and to see people taking a positive from what can be such a frustrating and you know, very lengthy period of time where we are restricted to our homes. So it's good to hear someone saying something so positive, you know, that's benefited them in aspiring towards their goals. For anyone listening to this who may be training for their first ultra marathon then, or debating it, what advice would you give them?
That training for an ultra marathon is a very humbling experience, because when you first start out and you're running your first 5K, your first 10K, or, you know, you might then start trying to get your 5K and your 10K quicker, and you're like, yes, that's great. Knowing that you can't maintain that pace five times over is very humbling. And for me, the biggest thing that really, I don't know what the word is, that kind of changed everything for me is when I stopped comparing my training run times to everyone else's Strava. Like, Strava is such a wonderful tool, but sometimes because everyone's so, like, goals are so different, you can look at it and go, well, why am I not running that quick? But someone's goal might be to go out and smash a 5K. Like, their goal might be to run the fastest 5K they've ever run. So your easy 30 minutes is going to look different to their fast 5K. And when I was starting my ultra marathon training was when everybody was at the start of lockdown doing, you know, their 5K for the NHS, nominate five people, off you go. And they're all smashing these really fast times. And I was like, why am I not doing that? And then I really had to get back inside my own head and be like, your goal is different to theirs. Think about the long run. You want to be able to run 10 times that. So you can't expect to be running that quick all the time. Your goal isn't speed. Mm-hmm. So my main tip is to remember that everybody's goals are different and not compare any of your runs with anybody else, because we're all training for different things. We've all got various, you know, factors that play into your training. And yeah, don't worry about your times. Like, the goal is distance. You're out there to do an ultra marathon, especially if it's your first one. It's the goal is to complete it, right? So it doesn't work well for you to be so pressurized into having to hit certain paces when that just probably isn't going to be maintainable over such a distance. So just take a bit of pressure off yourself and just remember what you want to complete is a very long run. So just allow yourself to run at a pace that is going to let you complete a very long run.
It's a great piece of advice. And also taking that pressure off, or something I say all the time. I think when we take that pressure off ourselves, we are able to achieve what we want to. I think that pressure can be quite debilitating and restrictive when you're aspiring towards, you know, especially a big, big goal.
Yeah.
And what did you say your goal was now for this year? You've got something massive coming up, haven't you? I've heard it wrong.
Well, my biggest goal this year, I've not even told you yet, and that's huge. The goal I've told you is that in July, I'm going to run 100 kilometres, which is just
massive.
Massive.
Where is this? Is it an official
route? Yes.
Which yeah, route is it?
I'm not doing this one by myself. It's the Salomon Serpent Trail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's an organised race. So hopefully come July, we'll be able to do it. I'm not sure I've got it in. I've done a virtual 60 by myself on a looped 5K route, and that was horrendous. I'd quite like not to run this next 100 kilometres by myself. So if it can happen in a race setting, then I'll be very, very grateful that it can go ahead.
fingers crossed indeed. That's a massive goal. And then there was another goal, was there, that you haven't yet shared with anyone?
When
is that being shared?
I can share it with you if you like, and this can be a little exclusive for you,
because by the time we post this now, it might be a good time for it to come out then.
So in October, on the day that the clocks go back, we've got one day of the year that you get 25 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how far I can run in 25 hours.
Okay. And where's this location going to be?
I need to sort that out. This is mad. And it's not an official event. It's my own that I'm making up to challenge myself. I've spoken to my coach, and she's all for it, thinks it's a great idea, so long as we plan it properly.
Yeah.
What we're going to do is see if we can make an ideal goal of somewhere I can run to. Mm-hmm. So my 100K, I guess, will kind of be a measure of how long it takes me to do that. And then we can kind of guesstimate how much further than that I might be able to run in 25 hours and run to somewhere rather than running a 5K loop for 25 hours. I might go a bit crazy.
Because I've heard quite a few people doing the 24-hour challenges, and those tend to be on a track, which to me sounds insanity. I mean, it's 400 metres, isn't it? Like running round and round and round. I feel like you just get dizzy.
Yeah,
that's what I think as well.
You'll end up wearing like your left shoe down, and you'll walk with a tilt afterwards for running so long.
Oh, I feel like you're getting off a boat, like you've been on a boat for a whole day. Like you've got motion sickness still carried through.
Yeah, that, that would be a no from me. I won't be doing mine on a track or a treadmill. It will be outside somewhere, going somewhere.
So the 100 kilometres now in July, in a way, will put you in good stead for that, for your bigger goal then in October. It's just fingers crossed that that takes place at the location, under race conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah. If like, obviously, you know, wheels of planning now, especially as a runner, we have to plan like everything down to the last detail. If it didn't go ahead in July, is that something that you'll do alone? You'll pick your own route?
I don't know. When I did my first 50 as a virtual, I did say I wouldn't do another. And then my January ultra, that was supposed to be another 50, that got moved virtual when we went back into lockdown again. But then if you couldn't make the elevation criteria, you could choose to do 60k without any elevation criteria. So I chose a 60k. So I trained for a 50 and I was then adding an extra 10k on, and I then ran 60k by myself. And I've since vowed I won't run another ultra marathon completely by myself until obviously my 25-hour challenge. But I don't know is the answer to that. I'd like to think at the point where, if we get to July and it can't happen, we might be in some kind of situation where I might still be able to run with one other or a couple of people, and maybe a few of us who have entered it. I don't know who. I might be able to find a couple of others that have entered it and we run it virtually, kind of like together. But I don't know. I would say, no, I won't run it, but the chances are I would.
Yeah. Especially if you want to do your challenge in October.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, you know, July is still quite a while away, isn't it? We'll keep our fingers crossed, especially with these vaccinations that continue to ramp up. I heard that one in every three adults have now been vaccinated. So yes, looking better, isn't it? One thing that I aim with this podcast is to, as you do as well, with everything that you do online and all your accomplishments, is to encourage people to get up and get going despite the obstacles in their way, despite ability or past experiences. What one piece of advice would you give anyone listening today to get up and get going?
To find what works for you. So for me, for you, we love running. That's great. That's not going to be the... we're not sort of like made from a cookie cutter, are we? So for us, that's great. Any kind of movement you can find that sparks some kind of joy, whether that be walking, whether that be doing your home workouts, whether that's, I don't know, getting a skipping rope out in your back garden, just finding that one thing that works for you that you don't dread doing. Like, it shouldn't be a chore. Sometimes training sessions are going to be hard. You're not always going to be motivated, but it should, the whole thing in its entirety shouldn't be a chore. So I think the key thing is to find that way of moving that you do enjoy. It might be challenging, it might be difficult, but you don't hate it altogether. But yeah, find that one thing that clicks for you and go with that. It doesn't matter if your friends are doing something different, they'll find what works for them. But find the one thing that you like doing and pursue that.
Love that. Love that. I do say that as well. And I think like even more so since I've not been able to run, I've like have to really find like what's working for me, like within my injury remit. And yeah, I just think that's really important to have that. I think that is also inclusive of like find what running works for you. You know, if you don't want to do events, like big mass events, and you know, you prefer you know, when we are able to return, park run every weekend, or just your own little plod every week, like whatever works for you. Essentially you do this for yourself. If you had to live by a quote, what would it be?
Oh, this is a tricky one.
It's hard as well, thinking it off the top of your head.
Was it Einstein who said doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is insanity?
Yeah, if you do the same thing over and over again and expecting different, yeah, That's good.
Yeah,
because you can't continue doing the same and expect the same.
And expect different results if you're going out and doing the exact same thing. Something's got to give. So if you're not enjoying something, mix it up. If something isn't working for you, mix it up. But you can't expect things to suddenly change if you're going out and doing the exact same thing.
Love that. That's good. Especially as you were put on the spot then. It's always so hard to think of a quote when you're on the spot.
Also, apologies to anybody who knows the actual quote.
Actual quote, and if it's wrong. But I definitely read it back wrong. And then when you explained it, oh yeah, I've definitely said the wrong way around. The opposite, the actual antonym for that quote. Yeah. And if you could hear anyone else on this podcast, who would it be?
Oh, love that. Who would I love to hear on this podcast? Oh, you put me on the spot again. Do you know what? I think you put that in your list of questions you sent out to me, and I've just gone blank. Natalie. Who would I love to hear on this podcast? Who'd I love hearing from? Oh my God, I follow so many amazing runners. Why can't I think of this? I'm so sorry.
It could be anyone. It could be, I mean, obviously, if they're famous, it's, you know, far reaching for me to get. Really famous.
Really famous, yeah. You've put me on the spot. Do you know what? I'm super duper inspired, motivated, driven, girl fanning hard on my coach, Carla Molinaro.
Yeah, I did think you were going to say that.
Like, I don't really know why I did. Like, I think I just froze then for a second. I was like, oh my God, I've got nothing in my head. But honestly, this woman is incredible. Mm. She prepped me for the 50 turn 60 virtual ultra in January. I was very fortunate to be given her coaching for that. And then I've since stayed on as a paying client for the rest of my goals this year and sort of beyond, because I got on so well with her training. Mm. But world record holder, Land's End, Shauna Croats, like, this woman is insane. And like in her Instagram bio, it's like, eats cake, runs far, all the other way around. And I'm like, I like running far.
I saw that on your stories this weekend as well, obviously after your birthday, about the cake and running with Coach. Yeah. That's a great one. That's a great one.
Yeah. So she's great. So if you could speak to anybody, I think it would be her. She's great.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. If you could just let everyone know where they could go to follow you, find you, or connect with you online.
Sure. So I'm mainly active on Instagram. And I do an email newsletter as well, but that's all on my Instagram too. So you'll find me over there at Charlotte Clark UK.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time today, Charlotte, and wishing you all the luck this year. And fingers crossed that July's event goes ahead and that we'll be following you in October as well, seeing your success.
Woohoo! Thank you for having me, Natalie. It's been so great. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Thank you guys so much for joining today and listening to Not Another Runner podcast. Please tell your friends and family who you think would enjoy the content I'll be sharing. Don't forget you can get in touch with me over on Instagram via Not Another Runner. Let me know your thoughts on the podcast, any suggestions on guests or topics. This is greatly appreciated. Send me your questions through as well if you want, and use the hashtag #WhyIRun to be featured. And hey, if you can, hit subscribe to the podcast. This will really help me to be able to give you more. Thank you again, and remember, when you get up and exercise or go for a run, you never regret going, but you always regret not going. Have a great week, guys, and speak soon.